Welcome back to the Rob O'Donnell Show on WILK News Radio, 103.1 FM, 910, 980 AM, or anywhere on that free Odyssey app. It is 409, 88 degrees on this Thursday, July 24th, 2025. So you know, I brought this up a little bit earlier today, and although our borders are a lot more secure than they have been in the past, fix our phone system here. There are still issues at our borders. People who don't want us are still attempting to get in. And we're going to talk about that story in a minute, but our phone system isn't working correctly, and I just set it back up to where I can see who's calling now. We're going to take this, and then we're going to get to that story. So we have Warren from Dallas. Warren.
Yeah, how you doing?
Good.
I just have a little interesting story of how I happened to meet Hulk Hogan. I was in the Army at the time. I'm a 30-year Army vet. And this was in the early 80s, and we had a meeting at a hotel in Omaha, Nebraska. And we were in the conference room, and it was break time, and we went out to the hallway. And in the hallway, we had a table set up with refreshments, donuts, and pastry, and that type of stuff. And all of a sudden, in the conference room right across the hall, there was all kinds of screaming and hollering, and it sounded like furniture breaking. About a minute later, the doors open up, and out walks Hulk Hogan, Andre the Giant, and all those famous wrestlers from that time. And they were in there, I guess, televising or making videos or something. But they came out, and we offered them the refreshments, and they took donuts and coffee and that, and he signed us autographs, and it was really strange, all that noise they were making.
And this was back in the 80s, Warren, you said?
Yeah, it had to be, well, let's see, I retired in 89, yeah, early 80s to maybe mid 80s.
That's great. Great story there. Warren, yeah. I appreciate your service as well. How many years did you do in the armed services?
30
years. Wow. What'd you get out as? What was your rank?
Sergeant Major.
Oh, congratulations to you. That's quite an achievement there, sir.
Yeah, especially when I joined the Army. I dropped out of high school in the 10th grade and went in the Army, and the Army sent me to college. I got my college degree and draw a nice pension. It was quite an experience. I was a special operator in Special Forces.
Wow. Well, what years did you serve?
68 to 90.
Well, God bless you, sir. Thankfully, there's people like you that were in this country and still are.
Yeah. I love it.
All right. Thanks for the Hulk Hogan story. That's a great, great story that, you know, you heard all the crashing and banging. They came out and
screaming and hollering. I mean, we couldn't figure out what was going on.
Now, I've seen Hulk Hogan. I've met him in person. He's a big guy. Oh, yeah. I could imagine what Andre the Giant looks like.
Yes. And there were a couple other, there were about four or five other wrestlers also, but I don't remember their names now that came out.
Yeah, he was definitely one of a kind in that whole crew. And there's a whole lot of them who've passed now, and I'm sure they're all hanging out now, making just as much ruckus up there.
Yeah.
Warren, I appreciate your call today, and thank you for your service.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir. I'm glad I took that call. Sergeant Major, 30 years in the Army. Wow. Wow. And a great story, you know, about Hulk Hogan. Just happenstance to bump into him, and that's that. So, you know, back to this story here, and this should concern you, A, for a couple reasons. A, it's not far from home. It's near our border, our northern border. But Border Patrol agents continue to arrest Iranians, weapons traffickers at the northern border. Yeah. At the northern border, Border Patrol agents continue to arrest Iranians and weapon traffickers that are helping seize record amounts of fentanyl that are still trying to get in. While illegal border crossings are down at the northern border under this administration, Border Patrol agents in the busiest northern border, Swanton sector, are continuing to interdict crime. The sector includes all of Vermont, six upstate New York counties, and three New Hampshire counties. Earlier this month, Border Patrol agents from the Champlain Station in New York responded to a report of suspicious activity near Moores Forks, New York. Upon arrival, they located a minivan occupied by 5 Iranian citizens and 2 Uzbekistan citizens, all adult men, military age, in the country illegally. Border Patrol agents then determined that all 7 men had previously illegally entered the United States at various locations along both the U.S.-Mexican border and the U.S.-Canadian border, Swanton Sector Chief Border Patrol Agent Robert Garcia said. They were detained and are being processed for removal. Border security is a national security and directly correlates to public safety, Garcia said, adding that the Swanton Sector agents remain vigilant and committed to protecting our borders and enforcing immigration laws. One of the problems they have run into is half their staffing at the northern border were sent to the southern border during the Biden administration to help with that influx there. But the mere fact that just a month ago, 5 Iranians and 2 Uzbekistans that have entered this country illegally before are caught in a minivan at the border. U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement officers are also arresting Iranians in the country illegally, including Revolutionary Guard soldiers, after more than 1,500 Iranians illegally entered the U.S. under the past administration, with more than 700 released into the U.S. In another instance, Border Patrol agents notified the New York State Police about a suspected driver of a vehicle allegedly involved in smuggling activity in upstate New York. State troopers responded, located, and stopped the vehicle near Albany. A subsequent vehicle search resulted in the seizure of roughly 4.7 pounds of powdered fentanyl, enough to kill more than 1 million people. The seizure is a powerful reminder of why strong partnerships between federal, state, and local law enforcement are vital to our national security and public safety, Swanton Sector Patrol Chief Agent Robert Garcia said. In another instance, Border Patrol agents helped ATF federal partners apprehend a criminal foreign national wanted for weapons trafficking. Honduran national Hubert Yacel Lopez Lopez, 31, was arrested in North Attleboro, Massachusetts, after he illegally re-entered the country after he was previously deported. He was first apprehended in 2014 after illegally entering the U.S. of Hilgado, Texas, under the Obama administration. A federal immigration judge in Houston ordered him removed, which occurred 4 years later under the first Trump administration. In 2022, he illegally entered the country in Yuma, Arizona, under the Biden administration, and took another 3 years to arrest him, this time in Massachusetts, with authorities learning he was wanted in Honduras on weapons trafficking charges. A federal grand jury indicted him last month in Vermont, and the U.S. Attorney for the District of Vermont announced he faced up to 2 years in prison if convicted and removal from the U.S. for a third time. We continue to enforce federal immigration laws, seek maximum consequences against those who violate them. Garcia, the section chief, also regularly thanks members of the public for supporting Border Patrol efforts, sometimes acting as the eyes and ears for federal agents in rural areas by calling in sightings of illegal border crossers and suspicious activity. He continues to encourage members of the public to report suspicious border activity in the Swanton sector. Now, if you don't know this area of New York, Vermont, New Hampshire, it is extremely, you think we have wooded areas here, it is extremely rural and desolate. So if you have a house in the woods, you might have hundreds of acres around you with no one. And if your trail cam, if your doorbell, if you have a sighting of people that could be harmful to you or the nation, yes, they often do work with law enforcement, be it for poachers when it comes to game, be it for state police if it's for regular normal crimes, and if they believe it's border crosses, they do call and assist with the Border Patrol that is very active up there. If you've ever traveled to our northern border, they do have checks on our side of the border, just like if you've gone to California and other places, they do have checkpoints with Border Patrol personnel. When I've been out in San Diego, I've been in the many times to where you go through, it's almost like a toll booth, and they ask you a few questions and you move on your way. But if this highlights anything, first of all, it's just a couple hours north of us. That's the main issue here. But here are people who have routinely continued to come back. And you have to ask yourself, why is there a van with five Iranian nationals and two Uzbekistans who have continuously tried to get into this country over and over again and been removed back in this country? With everything going on in the world, you know, I have another story later today where an Iranian helicopter was playing chicken with an Arleigh Burke-class destroyer U.S. warship in international waters. Seeing the video, and I've posted the video on my social media, but seeing the video, it is concerning at least. At most, I don't think the helicopter should have been still been in the air. But I don't make those decisions. But to not even see the SeaWiz tracking it, which could have taken it out of the sky at any time. Now, mind you, it really isn't a threat because we could have taken it out at any time. But I think we would have, should have taken more of a defensive posture rather than exactly what happened. The Iranians post a video of them telling the warship to back away from their borders and you know, using it as propaganda, saying they chased an American warship away when it was nothing of the sort. They were in international waters. They both had the right to be there. But I don't think that an Iranian helicopter, especially a military helicopter, should have got within 100 yards of a U.S. warship. Just don't think we should be allowing that this day and age when they've actively called for death to America for decades. It's 4:21 here at WILK, time for 2020 traffic and weather together. Welcome back to the Rob O'Donnell Show on WILK News Radio, 426, 88 degrees out there. So you heard about airlines losing your golf clubs, losing your baggage, maybe even misplacing your carry-on or stroller. They've even misplaced flights here and there, right? With stowaways getting on the wrong plane. Well, Turkish Airlines has lost a passenger that died on one of its flights. And they don't know where the body is. Yeah, you heard that right. Turkish Airlines passenger died during their international flight to California. And officials can't explain where the body is located right now. The passenger was on board a flight out of Istanbul heading to San Francisco on July 13th when they suffered a severe medical emergency. The crew was preparing to divert the plane to Keflavik Airport in Iceland after the passenger died midair. However, they ultimately decided to continue flying to North America rather than divert outside the U.S. airspace. The urgency to make an emergency landing decreases after a passenger dies, allowing the crew to find an airport that is better equipped to handle the situation, according to media outlets. Now, you have to figure, if someone is in duress, there is an emergency. There is an on-flight emergency. If they are pronounced or die on that plane due to whatever circumstances, it's still a crisis, but it's no longer an imminent emergency. Well, the plane, upon entering the airspace over the United States, the crew opted to land at Chicago O'Hare, a major international hub capable of handling emergency landings with adequate medical support and facilities. The cause of the passenger's emergency is still unknown at this point. I mean, I'm sure it's known to them, but it's not in the story. Nor at this point is relevant. A passenger died due to a medical emergency. Upon landing at O'Hare International Airport in Chicago, the body was removed from the aircraft. At this point, responsibility should have shifted to the Cook County Medical Examiner's Office. However, now here's where this whole thing starts getting a little weird. However, medical examiner spokesperson Natalia Devarani has stated that they have no record of a body being brought to them from the flight, nor does the office have any cases that would match the description of the incident. They have no one with the age, pedigree, name, nothing. Turkish Airlines station manager confirmed the diversion to Chicago O'Hare and added that the passengers' remains were later placed on a separate flight to San Francisco, but did not elaborate any further. The location of the passenger's body is still unknown. So the plane makes an emergency landing. Now, the plane was originally supposed to go to San Francisco. The plane makes an emergency landing in Chicago O'Hare, a major airport, a major hub, although San Francisco is as well. It's just closer to Iceland. They remove the body from the plane that it's on and put it on another plane instead of going to the medical examiner where it should have went, sending it to San Francisco. I would assume people start looking to where's Uncle Jimmy or Aunt Jen and find out it's not in Chicago. The Chicago medical examiner says, we have no such body here. And then the Turkish airline, who was responsible for transporting the body, says, well, yeah, I think we put it on another flight to its final destination, which was San Francisco. Hopefully, it was brought to the right authorities in San Francisco, but as per the story here, the location of the passenger's body is still unknown. Hopefully, it's not sitting in uncollected baggage somewhere, because that's going to be that's not going to be pleasant as time goes on. So you've heard about misplaced luggage, but I think this has taken that to a whole new level. It's 4:31 here at WILK. It's time for the news with Paul Michaels. Welcome back to the Rob O'Donnell Show on WILK News Radio. This is the point of the show where we honor our heroes here at home who made the ultimate sacrifice in law enforcement on this day, July 24th throughout history. We have one today, Private John A. Diskowski, Pennsylvania State Police, on this day in 1950. Private John Diskowski was struck and killed by a tractor trailer while conducting a traffic stop on U.S. Route 22 near Harrisburg. The driver of the tractor trailer veered off the road, struck his patrol car, causing it to strike a stopped vehicle and the private. Rookie private was with Private Diskowski, and the driver of the stopped vehicle suffered minor injuries. The driver of the tractor trailer had drove from Bedford, Pennsylvania to Brooklyn, New York, and was on a return trip back to Bedford when he fell asleep and struck the private's vehicle. In September of 1950, the driver pled guilty to involuntary manslaughter and was sentenced to 23 months in prison. The private had served with the Pennsylvania State Police for a little more than 3 years and had served in the United States Navy during World War II. He was survived by his wife. And again, this was on this day, July 24th, 1950. And just keying in on that, I know a lot of us have friends who are on road crews, either for PennDOT or private contractors that work on the roads, and law enforcement. If you see the workers on the road, and I'm seeing a lot of them lately, they're doing up on 81 on my on-ramp to 81 near my house. They've been doing work on the on-ramp on the shoulder, and it's taking up most of the shoulder. And they do a good job of placing cones out, but it does take up a large portion of the lane. And you really have to get over almost onto the grass before the highway cuts in on the right-hand side. Take it slow. Now, I understand you're getting on an on-ramp. I understand you're driving wherever you're driving. If you see a vehicle with flashing lights on the side of the road, move to the other lane. Matter of fact, it's a law. If you see construction crews, if you see PennDOT crews, if you see their trucks with the arrows and flashing lights because they're doing roving work, move over. Slow down. You're still going to get to where you're going, but if you're not careful, someone may not get where they're going, and you may have to deal with the consequences. So please, if anything, be hypervigilant. We have motorcycles on our roads. You have crews out on our roads. You have law enforcement trying to keep us safe on our roads. Do the right thing. Slow it down. And I've seen some crazy drivers. I spend a lot of time on 81, 70 miles a day round trip through two different counties. And, big intersections of 84, sometimes even down by 80. people returning home safely to their families is the key here. And I understand you may want to get there a few minutes faster. You may be running late for that appointment. Leave a little earlier. Be a little late. You know, this, your safety, the families that are out on the road safety, these workers, these officers' safeties, and their families at home that expect them to return in one piece, they deserve that. And the least we can do is slow it down and move it over, right? It is 4:40 here at WILK. Time for 2020 traffic and weather together. Welcome back to the Rob O'Donnell Show here on WILK News Radio. It's time for Today in History, because how do we know where we're going unless we remember where we've been? Let's see what we have today. It jumps around a lot today. 1969, Apollo 11 returns to Earth. Just 4 days after Neil Armstrong and Buzz Aldrin became the first humans to walk on the moon, Apollo 11 splashed down in the Pacific on July 24th, 1969. The successful mission marked the end of one of the most remarkable voyages in human history and fulfilled President Kennedy's 1961 promise of putting a man on the moon before the decade was out. He did that indeed. 1847, the Mormon pioneers arrive in Utah. Brigham Young led the first large group of Mormon pioneers to the Salt Lake Valley, declaring, "This is the place." Their arrival marked the founding of what would become Salt Lake City, Utah, and a critical chapter in the westward expansion and religious freedom. 1866, Tennessee rejoins the Union. After the Civil War, Tennessee became the first former Confederate state readmitted into the Union. The state had ratified the 14th Amendment, protecting the civil rights of formerly enslaved people, which helped its early readmission. Some judicial history today. 1959, Katzenbach versus McClug argued, later ruling in 1964. Though the final ruling came years later, the case had its beginning today. Became a key civil rights case to where the Supreme Court would later rule that Congress could enforce the Civil Rights Act against restaurants that refused to serve black customers under the Commerce Clause. 1987, Lieutenant Colonel Oliver North testifies before Congress. As part of the Iran-Contra hearings, Oliver North testified before Congress, admitting to his role in the covert sale of arms to Iran and the illegal funding of Nicaragua Contras. His defiant appearance captivated the nation and became the turning point in the Reagan administration's legacy. Some births today. Let's see what we have. This is a good group of people. Amelia Earhart, 1897, aviation pioneer and feminist icon. Jennifer Lopez, 1969, singer, actress, and global pop culture figure. Jenny from the block, right? Up in the Bronx. The original Bronx girl. Alexandre Dumas, 1801, though French, greatly influenced American literary and cultural life with the works of the Three Musketeers and the Count of Monte Cristo. And that's a little bit of today in history. Jake sent me something this week with NASCAR's planning a road race in conjunction with the Navy's 250th birthday.
Yeah, next, the Navy 250.
Next year, the Navy 250. And some of the commercials, some of the graphics, some of the specials coming out of this, especially the one you sent me, they are truly putting a massive production behind this. And it's going to take place on Coronado Base, and that's where the Navy SEALs train. That's where Buds is held. It's right down the road from North Island, where the original Top Gun used to be. Now it's in Fallon, Nevada. But just an iconic place for the Navy. Plus, you have the largest West Coast naval base there, San Diego, Navy Base San Diego.
Yeah, Rob, this is absolutely incredible. This is a rumor that's been going on for several months now. And like I talked about a couple weeks ago, when there was the rumor of Franklin Field or Street Race in Philadelphia, when all those rumors were going on, this San Diego rumor has been going on for quite some time, because like I talked about, NASCAR has always coveted the Southern California market. When you think of the clash that they had at the LA Coliseum for 3 years, that sort of ran its course, but also Fontana, California, I think it's about an hour or so from Hollywood. and they raced there for 26 years. They were supposed to turn it into a short track. That land was bought. Obviously, that project was pretty much left for dead. So this is incredible for it to be classified as a street race. And as you talked about the Naval Base, the 250th birthday of the United States Navy, also very, very close to the 250th birthday of America, for that matter. And it's incredible that all three major series are going to take part in this. You're going to have the Craftsman Truck Series Friday, June 19th, the Xfinity Series on Saturday, June 20th, and then on Father's Day, June 21st, is the NASCAR Cup Series. And I'm really, really excited about it, like you talked about, and like so many people in the NASCAR industry talked about. The videos that NASCAR put together to announce this, when you bring in a William Byron, Chase Elliott, Chase Briscoe, Noah Gregson, Carson Hocevar, and just the way that they were able to tie both of them together, and also a little bit of George Thorogood that was in the video as well, it made me really, really excited for this race in 2026.
I threw in some classic cars there. I mean, basically the
Joey
Navy
Logano,
the
forgot.
Navy commander was there and basically said, you know, how are you going to get past Navy security?
Yeah.
And they come out with these classic cars to head out. And it's funny, when they think they're safe, the Navy security personnel jumps up from the back seat and just folds her arms.
Yeah.
But yeah, it took them up in some F-18s. I think they regretted asking for more speed. But, I mean, these guys are not shy to the G's they take in their own cars. But, even in the video, it looked like they were pretty queasy.
Oh, for sure. And then, I loved the one outtake that they had with Hocevar when he was like, where's SVG? You know, Shane Van Gisbergen, as he's been winning all these road courses and street courses lately. And I got to credit NASCAR, because this is something – they've listened to the fans as far as the schedule goes, because for the longest time, I would say about 10 years ago, it was basically the same complacent schedule. You would just have a couple dates that would get swapped around every year, for that matter. And they definitely threw a Hail Mary on this as far as street course, but also on a naval base as well, and the Southern California market, like I talked about. So I'm really excited to see what the rest of the 2026 schedule is going to look like. It's going to be on Prime Video. I believe that will be their last of five races that they will have next year. So definitely exciting, man.
Yeah, I mean, they'll have enough personnel there, but you know, Navy Base Coronado is a highly secure naval base. It's not like the general public, I don't think, will be allowed in to view this race, but I think there'll be enough Navy personnel there to stock that.
I think it was either Bob Pockaris from Fox Sports or Jeff Gluck from The Athletic, and I believe they said that, I believe as far as fans go, it probably be, I think, tens of thousands or so, and they said that fans would be able to purchase tickets for it.
Yeah, looking at the course, and I think what they're going to do is they're going to block off areas near the perimeter of it to have fan bases there, maybe even put up bleachers there. Because I looked at the course, and I've been on Navy Base Coronado a few times. Looking at the course, it does hit the perimeter at a couple of locations. And there are some areas to where they obviously have to be vetted, because, again, this is where your Navy SEAL buds training takes place. But I think you're going to see an entire week. Like you said, all three different entities will be using this road course.
Yes.
Will be there. I think you're going to see an entire week at events. I would not be surprised if on the USS Midway, which is now the museum aircraft carrier that's in San Diego, them having an event there earlier in the week with drivers and such like that. Sort of like Tom Cruise did for, you know, his Top Gun 2, where he came in on a helicopter onto the Midway and they had an entire premiere on the deck of the USS Midway. I could see something like that happening here.
Yeah, I'm excited. And I think it was the Chargers not too long ago that they actually had a practice session on one of the bases, I believe.
Yeah.
Yeah. Real San Diego roots there.
Yeah. Real quick, I know you probably saw the video of Aaron Rodgers in his Steelers uniform walking down the crowd at practice today. And is there any update on the Jets quarterback who went down?
Justin Fields, I know they said that it was a lower injury. They were thinking that it could be a toe injury possibly, and Aaron Glenn, their new head coach, said that he doesn't have all the information yet, but he hopes to have something in the near future. And it is pretty ironic that those two are going to be going up against each other on opening day. Justin Fields, hopefully. But going up against Pittsburgh, Aaron Rodgers going up against the Jets, like I talked about a couple months ago, I see what they did there with the schedule.
Yeah, and you know, it looked the way he was limping around, maybe Achilles, a toe, I don't think would be that bad. Painful, but yeah. You know, hopefully it's nothing more than that.
Yeah, I was going to say, it seems like the Jets just have awful luck when it comes to huge quarterback acquisitions. I mean, because ironically with Aaron, it was 2 years ago, Monday night, his debut with the team, and four plays in, tears his Achilles and he's out for the season. And
well, I know their training crew is having flashbacks when he went down, man. Because nothing, he was just throwing a normal pass. No, he wasn't really hit or nothing. It just kind of tweaked his ankle the wrong way or his foot the wrong way and something happened.
Yeah, I'm hoping for Justin's sake that he'll be ready to go week one, but
yeah, we'll see. Well, Jake, I appreciate it as always.
Thank you.
It's 4:55 here at WILK. We'll be back. Welcome back to the Rob O'Donnell Show on WILK News Radio. 4:58 coming up on the 5 o'clock hour here. So, as I told you, an Iranian Navy helicopter confronted a U.S. warship attempting. The Associated Press is great. Attempting to approach Iranian territorial waters in the Gulf of Oman on Wednesday, Iranian state TV reported. So now the Associated Press is parroting what the Iranian state TV says. They were in international waters off the coast of Iran, not in Iranian territorial waters. The incident was the first direct encounter reported between Iranian and U.S. forces since the 12-day war between Iran and Israel and the U.S. B-2 bombers targeting Iran nuclear facilities. There is video of this, and in my view, this Iranian helicopter came far too close, and there are two SeaWiz entities on either end, the bow and the stern of an Arleigh Burke-class destroyer. SeaWiz is a dome that shoots like 1,000 rounds a second and could take anything out of the sky. It's a last round line of defense for something coming in close to the and you could see that neither of them are tracking this helicopter, meaning they're not pointing at it. And it's not going wherever they're going. These things are guided electronically, and you obviously they have to be given the go-ahead by someone inside the CIC to shoot. But in my opinion, should it at least been tracking? You know, I see reports that the captain of the ship had nothing to worry about and didn't want to instigate the issue further. As of yet, the U.S. has not made a statement on this, but Iran is obviously putting this audio out as propaganda, saying they chased the American warship away. Not the case. It's 5 o'clock here at WILK.